My name is Christopher Allen Maloney, and this is Why This Movie, a podcast where we talk about the movies we love and why we love them. Today I'm talking with my friend Justin, a fellow writer and filmmaker from New York. So Justin, what movie are we talking about today?
Well, today we're going to be talking about what I think is a unfairly maligned movie classic, movie called Batman Forever.
In the summer of 1995, the third Batman movie, the first without Michael Keaton as Batman and Tim Burton directing, was released. This time around, Val Kilmer became the Dark Knight with Joel Schumacher directing, while Jim Carrey and Tommy Lee Jones took over villain duty as the Riddler and Two-Face respectively.
Riddle me this, riddle me that. Who's afraid of the big black bat?
In an uncertain world, in a chaotic time, justice wears a mask.
Was better.
Love is a game.
What is it about the wrong kind of man?
It's the car, right? Chicks love the car.
Power is a machine.
Now you've devised a way to read men's minds.
By the way, I've seen your mind, freak.
And revenge is a trap.
You're a devious.
Riddler and Two-Face can make a pretty lethal combination.
Train me. Let me be your partner.
Who's your tailor?
But first, let's meet our contestants.
Going down.
If the bat wants to play, we'll play.
Was that over the top?
Don't work too late.
You forgot the part where you kissed the girl.
The real game begins.
Courage now. Truth always. Batman forever.
We see two origin stories here. That of the Riddler and Robin, Batman's eventual sidekick. In the Riddler's case, he begins as Edward Nigma, a sniveling inventor who turns to a life of mind control and crime after his life's work is rejected by his idol Bruce Wayne.
I need an answer now. I think I deserve it.
I'm sorry, Ed, then the answer's no. Tampering with people's brain waves, mind manipulation, it just raises too many questions. Sorry.
You were supposed to understand. I'll make you understand.
In the case of Robin, he's Dick Grayson, part of a family of trapeze artists when he witnesses his parents die at the hands of Two-Face during a circus takeover. After being taken in at Wayne Manor, Grayson catches on to Bruce's secret identity and plans to work alongside Batman to avenge his own parents' death.
I need a name. Batboy, Nightwing. I don't know. What do you think? What's a good sidekick name?
How about Dick Grayson, college student?
Screw you. I just saved your life. You owe me.
You are totally out of control. You're going to get yourself killed.
You're looking at your new partner.
No.
Bruce, whenever you go out at night, I'll be watching. And wherever Batman goes, I'm going to be right beside him. I mean, how are you going to stop me?
I can stop you.
Al, hang this next to the bat suit, where it belongs.
The Riddler and Two-Face join forces for an ultimate showdown with Batman and Robin, a big spectacle of lights, sound, costumes, and makeup.
I have a riddle for you. For me.
Really?
Tell me.
I see without seeing. To me, darkness is as clear as daylight. What am I?
Please! You're as blind as a bat!
Exactly.
For me, you know, it is a movie that came out at a perfect time in my life to get involved in superheroes, and it was a perfect end to that world. And so because of that, you know, we can talk about its entertainment value, but on a personal level, that's why it's one of my favorites.
When you saw it for the first time, did you see it at the movie theater?
Yeah, no, I saw it at the movie theater. You know, that's the thing. Some of these early movies that I fall in love, like Jurassic Park, I saw that in video. I didn't see that in theaters. I didn't see Hook in theaters or anything like that. Batman Forever was a movie I saw in the theaters, but I was also, I saw probably half the movie through a slit in the door of the theater, because I used to get very scared of movies. I used to get very triggered by movies back in those days. And so I cannot tell you how many movies I forced my parents to take me out of because I was scared. Batman Forever was one of them. I think I saw half the movie. I like got scared at something, and I would watch the rest of the movie just kind of peeking through the slit in the door of the theater. But I remember it, even back then, it was a big deal. And I look back on it now, and I still kind of like get like a little excited when I watch the beginning of the movie, because back in those days, superhero movies were very different from what they are now. They were superhero movies. There really were only the Batman movies in the 90s. Anytime they tried to make a superhero movie that was not a Batman movie, it was a flop. And these Batman movies became like events. Now they're no longer events. There's nothing special about the superhero movies, particularly I guess the Marvel movies, because they're in a cinematic universe. So each movie kind of feels like a TV show where there's a different director each week. They all look the same. It's like one vision for like 25 films. There's no like, you don't get excited anymore about seeing what Ang Lee has to do with the Hulk or what Sam Raimi is going to do with Spider-Man. They're not like, auteur driven anymore. They're kind of studio driven. They're a package product. And back in the 90s, when they were making these Batman movies, these were the only movies they were making at that time. And they were events and they were big deals. And you watch the beginning of the movie and the Warner Brothers logo morphs into the Bat logo, and you can just tell how much of an event this was just by the opening credits. Because you have the names of the actors in giant letters flying across the screen, and they play this like triumphant like march as they're doing so, and that just kind of shows you like what a big event it was a big event movie. It has big stars in it, and it's something that you don't feel with any movies today. It not just superhero movies, but just any movies. I can't think of a movie where like you're today, or any movie since really, where you're watching the opening credits of the movie and they're making such a big deal about who's in it. And that's something unique, I feel, to that movie. And that just shows you how much of an event that was at the time.
For years, there have been rumors about a longer, superior edit of Batman Forever put together by director Joel Schumacher, the so-called Schumacher Cut. This was ostensibly what Schumacher intended before the studio intervened and insisted on certain things being changed or removed altogether. So, the Schumacher cut does exist, though very few people have seen it. One of those very few people is today's guest.
Kevin Smith owns a theater in New Jersey, and if you go to one of the screenings that he's at, part of how they fund the theater is they hold these auctions. And these auctions, if you go to a screening, you're not going to get out until like 3 a.m. because they have like these 2-hour auctions before everything you do, where he like auctions off shit for the fans. And these people in the audience, they pay a lot of money for them. And I guess at one of these auctions, a guy bid on something and he says, I'll pay this, but also the Schumacher cut of Batman Forever. He had a hard drive. Somehow he had it. He hasn't really like explained how he got it.
No, he stole
but
it.
Probably. he gave it to Kevin Smith for Kevin Smith to watch. Supposedly the guy told him you can't share it with anybody. But then like Kevin Smith announced that he saw it and he recorded a podcast where he talks about it. And then, which supposedly he was not supposed to do either, he said, we have a couple screenings going on at our theater. And he probably thought this was a good way to get people into his theater because he's trying to, save his theater that he bought. And he said, we're doing a couple podcast recordings during the summer. And if you hang out after the recording, we might just watch a movie. He couldn't say what it was because he can't legally show it. He can only show it. It's legal to watch it in your residence, which he lives above the theater. So the theater is technically considered his residence. So he's showing it in his residence and he's not advertising it. But we knew what it was. So I was listening to that podcast. I was watching it live because he was going to talk about, what he saw in the Schumacher cut. And as soon as he said that, I went onto the site and I booked a couple tickets to see that podcast. And yeah, and so me and a friend, we went to his theater. And if you go to his theater, it's great. It's kind of like a little Kevin Smith museum. It's fantastic. He recorded his podcast. He had a little meet and greet where I got to meet him. Finally, got a hug from him, got my picture taken with him. And then he showed the Schumacher cut. And it's a little longer. It's a lot of the deleted scenes we have actually seen because they were released on the DVD when that came out about 20 years ago, 15, 20 years ago. There's a lot more. There's actually a lot of stuff that was put on the deleted scenes that's actually not in this version. It's structured differently. It's a darker film. I would say it's like a great adaptation of the 90s Batman TV show. I would say it's a great adaptation. Oh, yeah. It feels like that.
The animated show. Yeah.
It feels like an adaptation of that. It's darker and it's much more interesting. One of the things you discover about the original cut of the movie is that they ADR'd a massive amount of the movie, which is kind of normal in movie productions. And ADR, of course, is where they replace dialogue because either it wasn't recorded correctly or they just want to get a different performance. And that's what they did with Tommy Lee Jones. One of the things you discover about the Schumacher cut is that his entire performance in the theatrical cut of Batman Forever is ADR'd. The inflections in his voice are different. It's a different performance. It's much more subdued. There's one scene where he meets the Riddler for the first time, and the Riddler comes in, and you hear Tommy Lee Jones's Two-Face off screen, I think, say, "Who the hell are you?"
"I hope you made extra."
"Who the hell are you?"
"Just a friend. But you can call me
the Riddler."
In the Schumacher cut, it's more like, "Who the hell are you?" It's totally different. And so that seemed to have been a studio note of, it seemed to be kind of on set.
For him to get like crazier.
To get like crazier. But even like when the studio saw the Schumacher cut, his work print, which is the director's cut, which basically the director makes a cut of his version of the movie and then shows it to the studio and then they ruin it. They were like, "We need to make this guy more like the Joker." And so the performance is wildly over the top, I think, to mimic that. And you see that in the original cut of the film. I would say that that is my favorite Batman movie, is the Schumacher cut. I mean, Batman Forever has always been low-key my favorite Batman movie, but I say it proudly now that the Schumacher cut is my favorite Batman movie. You know, it's a work print version. It's not something you can release. It has like temp score in it. You know, there's a big one of the other movies that I defend, another threequel that I love, is Alien 3. And that was also scored by Elliot Goldenthal, and like one of the most emotional moments in the Schumacher cut of Batman Forever is where, which is something you can watch, it's online, where he kind of comes to terms with his grief and who he is as Batman. You see him like out, his arms outstretched as he kind of meets with a giant bat. During that sequence in the Schumacher cut, they actually play one of my favorite cues from the Alien 3 score. And so I'm like in the theater, like my mind is being blown. I'm watching this scene and it has the Alien 3 music. It was incredible. It was just an incredible night. It was a great memory that me and my friend Sean had watching this film. And there's probably only less than 200 people in the world that have seen this cut. Having said that, you know, the theatrical, I don't know if that's ever going to get released. I hope it does. I don't know if it is. There's talk about it. I guess at one point it was close to getting released. Joel Schumacher is dead, but Akiva Goldsman, the screenwriter, I guess is the, I guess, I don't know, the owner of this now. I guess it was close to being a release, but then, like, you know, different management took over Warner Brothers about 5 years ago. I don't know if it'll ever get released. I hope it does, because people should see it. But the movie that you saw, again, this goes back to, you know, what I said, you know, why a movie like this is one of my favorites. The movie that you saw when you were a kid and you saw for the first time, and you fell in love with it for the first time, and you've watched all these years, you know, nothing is really actually going to replace that. The movie that was released in theaters is the movie. And while I think this is a better version of the movie, and I would like to see it again, and I would like more people to see it, the theatrical cut is the movie that I fell in love with the first time. And so that's always going to be my movie, whether I see this version again or not.
At the heart of Batman Forever, what is it really about, and how does that resonate with you personally?
What Batman Forever is about, which is very interesting because it kind of has a story. You know, Batman Returns doesn't really have a story. It's more about the villains. The villains have a story, because that's what Tim Burton seemed more interested in. The first movie, you don't even know why he chose Batman as to be. You know, his parents died, but you never even know why he chose a bat. And so Batman Forever really delves into that, and it delves into it more in the Schumacher cut. But even in the theatrical cut, it's about grief, and, you know, he sees what happened to him, you know, has happened to Robin, because his parents have been killed by Two-Face. And, you know, Bruce Wayne doesn't want him to become like him. And it's about him coming to terms with his parents' death. And it's very ironic because, like I said, I saw the movie, you know, kind of through my fingers the first time. But my mother passed away when I was 7. And I remember, it's one of my vivid memories in life, is that the morning that I was told my mother had passed away, you know, I went downstairs, and right on the, you know, the living room table was an overdue Blockbuster videotape of Batman Forever. It had come out on video probably a month previously. And of course, anybody who, you know, was a Blockbuster goer remembers, especially in the 90s, you had two types of videos. You had the 3-day blue rentals. You had the 2-day red rentals. I see this red tape on the counter there. And that was the first movie that I watched, me and my dad watched, literally minutes after I was told my mother had passed away. And it, ironically, that's a movie about him, you know, overcoming his grief over his parents' death. And it's just ironic that was there. And because of that, you know, I've always had a kinship to the Batman character, and specifically this movie.
It's interesting to me that within minutes you were sitting down and watching a movie. Because when something that searing happens, I mean, like, what do you do? You know, like,
oh, yeah.
What do you do in those first few hours?
Yeah, I've mentioned that. I brought that up to my dad, that's what we did after I found out. And my dad, like, looks back on it and he's like, wow, I can't even imagine, like, how, you know, I got through it. Him, you know.
Like, right. Like, how do you even remember how to operate a VCR?
Right, exactly. And you're also just now, not only are you watching a movie, it's not just like a, you know, any kind of like cartoon or, you know, oh, I mean, I guess any cartoon has, you know, similar themes like Lion King or something like that. But you think you're going to put something on to kind of deflect, you know, what's going on in your head right now. And the movie that came on just happened to be about a guy coming over the fact that his parents were killed or parents died. So it probably wasn't the right movie to watch at that time, but I'm glad it was.
But it must have given you some place to go to feel what you were feeling.
I mean, you see, you know, you're in the depths of despair in a moment like that. And, you know, at the end, he overcomes it and he becomes the hero. And so it's good to see, you know, again, it's like probably like, you know, that's probably not something we should be confronted with at that moment. But at the end, you know, it has a happy ending, you know, where, you know, he's haunted by the trauma of his parents' death. And at the end, you know, he says to Chase Meridian, who's given him this dream catcher, protects against bad dreams. He gives it back to her, and you know, he says, you know, thank you for giving me a new dream. So that's good for a kid who now has to overcome grief. So it's good to see a visual representation of someone who has. My favorite moment in that movie, and it's become somewhat of a religious experience for me every time I watch it. As a person who is a fan of film and who is interested in writing and screenwriting and critiquing films, I admit it's not really earned in that moment. But ever since I was a kid, my favorite movie and my favorite moment in that movie, and it's probably one of my top five favorite moments in any movie, is at the end of the movie. You know, in a script they have the all is lost moment where you think it, you know in this movie, I guess it's, you know, Val Kilmer, Bruce Wayne has given up being Batman. He's actually been shot by Two-Face. You think it's all over, but there's a moment where Commissioner Gordon, he puts on the bat signal, and he says to, you know, his officer, says, "Shut it down. He's not coming." And then you hear like the bat wing in the distance, like soaring through the air. And then he looks up and he sees the bat wing burst through the bat signal. And then they cut to this shot, which a lot of people think is like silly, where Batman looks out at him and he gives him the thumbs up. And that moment, even thinking about it now, I get a little tear in my eye, because it's that moment of what we like movies about and why we like superhero movies, is that these guys give us hope that everything is going to be all right. And you know, you could say whatever you want about that movie, but I think that movie is that scene is fantastic. And I thank whoever came up with it for giving me that moment, because I probably needed it in that moment. And I look upon it fondly ever since.
Yeah, at its best, that's what a movie does for us. I'm glad that you had that too, even if you might not have realized the significance of it at the time. It was something, it was giving you a message of hope.
Absolutely. You know, I'm sure that when you talk to people on the show and they talk about their favorite movie and why this movie, it's most likely it's a movie that they grew up with. I think that anytime you're talking to somebody who's like a true cinephile, not like a, you know, a casual viewer who just likes movies, but like a real like cinephile, will always tell you whenever they're asked what their favorite movie is, it's either a movie that they grew up with that came out when they were young in their formative years, you know, 0 to 20 years old, let's say. It's either a movie that came out during that period or a movie that they, an older movie that they discovered during that period. Because in your formative years, you know, childhood into, you know, teenager, when you're, you know, starting to become like who you are, those are the movies that get like weaved into the fabric of who you are. You know, we've talked about Hook in the past, and so that's one of these movies. You know, I doubt that, like, I, you know, I don't have any favorite movies, or I like movies that come out now, but I don't have any like favorite movies. I can't tell you one movie that has come out in, you know, since I was young that I would say is like, this is one of my all-time favorite movies. It's always the ones that kind of like are with you when you come up, because not only is it, it's weaving into the fabric of who you are, it informs your tastes, but also eventually informs your memories.
Thank you for listening to Why This Movie. If you have a movie that you love that you'd like to talk about, email me at christopherallenmaloney@gmail.com, and you may be featured on an upcoming show.